morning. It's Thursday, June 22nd, 2006. Coming right up on the KBOO News, a judge has given the go-ahead to the Mike's Gulch timber sale. Logging could begin as soon as Monday. Seven Marines and a sailor have been charged with the murder of an Iraqi civilian. And Bolivian President Evo Morales is saying that the U.S. is sending troops to his country disguised as students and tourists. Portland area weather today, patchy clouds becoming mostly cloudy to the north, partial afternoon clearing, temperatures in the 70s, tonight mostly cloudy, temperatures 40 to 45.
Despite protests by the governor of Oregon and environmentalists, the U.S. Forest Service auctioned off the first timber from a roadless area of national forest since the Bush administration eased rules on logging. Hours after the auction, Governor Ted Kulongoski said he would seek a court order blocking the harvest based on a lawsuit that Oregon, Washington, California, and Mexico have filed challenging the legality of the administration's overhaul of protections of the 58.5 million acres of undeveloped areas in national forests known as roadless areas. The Mike's Gulch timber sale on the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest in southern Oregon could lead to the first major harvest in a roadless area anywhere in the country since the Bush administration adopted rules giving states a chance to help the Forest Service decide whether to log in the undeveloped areas. Roadless areas are tracts generally larger than 5,000 acres that have long been considered too remote and too rugged to be logged economically. Pressure has been increasing to exploit the old-growth timber found in them. Although the sale has gone through, logging will not start until Monday.
A California company has been warned that it may have violated a ban on paying per signature for ballot measure petitions in Oregon. Oregon election officials had originally approved plans by Arno political consultants for paying signature gatherers. But state elections director John Lindback sent a letter to the company this week expressing fresh concerns about those arrangements. Lindback said it appeared the hourly pay and bonuses for signature gatherers were directly tied to the number of signatures they collected. This is a violation of the ban that Oregon voters approved in 2002 on the bounty system for petitions. Michael Arno says the company is reviewing its payment methods and will bring them into compliance with Oregon law.
And a Bush administration proposal to rework an Energy Department agency that oversees nuclear and worker safety is running into opposition. Washington Governor Chris Gregoire joined New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson, who was Energy Secretary in the Clinton administration, in sending a letter to current Energy Secretary Samuel Bodman. The letter criticizes a proposal to merge the Office of Environmental Safety and Health with other Department of Energy agencies, saying the plan will weaken safety and health protections. The office is in charge of establishing health and safety rules for the DOE and contractor employees. It also oversees health studies and medical screening programs and environmental impact statements related to agency activities. Both Gregoire and Richardson have large Energy Department nuclear facilities in their states. Energy Department officials deny the change would weaken health and safety standards.
The effort to make health care a constitutional right in Oregon gained added support this week. Former Governor John Kitzhaber, who created the Oregon Health Plan, lent his backing to the potential ballot measure, and the Oregon Nurses Association made a major donation to help get the initiative before voters this fall. The HOPE initiative would amend the Oregon Constitution to say that access to health care is a fundamental right. It would also force the legislature to develop a plan to meet that obligation by 2009. The initiative does not outline how the access to health care would be delivered. The initiative has collected close to 80,000 signatures so far. The initiative could also pave the way for any decision coming out of Kitzhaber's Archimedes movement. Kitzhaber has been holding packed community meetings around the state for the Archimedes movement. The effort aims to gather citizens' ideas on how to create a better healthcare system and use their activism to pressure politicians to adopt the concept.
Facing two dozen legal skirmishes around the country over top secret NSA surveillance programs, federal lawyers want to shift the battlefield to their home turf, where they will try to put an end to it all with one shot. In a little notice filing, U.S. Department of Justice lawyers asked the Judicial Panel on Multidistrict Litigation to consolidate about two dozen cases, including two from Oregon, before a judge in Washington, D.C. Federal lawyers said they intend to seek dismissal of all the suits in order to protect state secrets. The move, which did not reach many opposing attorneys until Tuesday, comes as federal attorneys are expected today to inform a federal judge in Portland that a lawsuit here would expose state secrets. They are expected to make the same argument in San Francisco later this week. By asking the federal panel in Washington to consolidate all the lawsuits, justice lawyers say they are trying to be efficient and protect national security, but lawyers challenging the program bristled at the move. Together, the multiple NSA lawsuit challenged two district surveillance programs and the alleged violations of several federal laws. In Oregon, lawsuits have been filed challenging both NSA programs.
A Portland legal group has alerted four timber companies, State Forester Marvin Brown, and the State Board of Forestry that a lawsuit is in the works because of federal Clean Water Act violations. The Northwest Environmental Defense Center says logging roads are funneling polluted water into Coast Range rivers when it rains. The group, which is based at Lewis and Clark College, has effectively used similar Clean Water Act lawsuits against companies releasing pollution into the Columbia Slough and Willamette River. The group said this week it has water tests and video footage that prove the muddy water is entering the Trask and Kilchis rivers, prime salmon rivers that run into Tillamook Bay. Executive Director Mark Risdahl said he hopes the state and companies will negotiate a solution within the next 2 months. Otherwise, the groups will file a lawsuit. The Oregon Department of Forestry has documented the problems in its own reports over the past decade. The department told the Oregonian that it would not comment on the planned lawsuit.
Seven Marines and a sailor have been charged with murder in the April death of an Iraqi civilian. All eight also were charged with kidnapping, according to a Marine statement issued at Camp Pendleton, California. Other charges include conspiracy, larceny, and providing false official statements. Separately, the U.S. military in Iraq announced that murder charges were filed against a 4th Army soldier in the shooting deaths of May 9th of three civilians who had been detained by U.S. troops. Specialist Justin Graber was charged with one count of premeditated murder, one count of attempted premeditated murder, one count of conspiracy to commit murder, and making a false official statement. In the case of the April killing of an Iraqi civilian, the allegation is that Marines pulled an unarmed man from his home on April 26 and shot him to death without provocation. Seven Marines and one Navy corpsman were from the Pendleton-based 3rd Battalion, 5th Marine Regiment, were taken out of Iraq in late May and put in the confinement at Pendleton pending the filing of the charges. The case is separate from the alleged killing by other Marines of 24 Iraqi civilians in Haditha last November. A pair of investigations related to that case are still underway, and no criminal charges have been filed.
An FBI team is headed to a federal prison in Florida today to begin investigating a deadly shootout between a guard and federal agents who are trying to arrest him and five others indicted in a sex for contraband scandal. Corrections Officer Ralph Hill, an Air Force veteran, had smuggled a gun into the prison and opened fire yesterday morning on FBI agents and Justice Department investigators. Hill and Justice Department Special Agent William Sentner killed, and a prison employee helping with the arrests was wounded. The five surviving guards have pleaded not guilty and were scheduled to appear in a court bail hearing this afternoon. The men were indicted by a grand jury on Tuesday on charges alleging that five of them had sex with female inmates in exchange for contraband such as money, alcohol, or drugs, and another helped in the scheme. Officials said the guard fired with a personal weapon. Guns are prohibited from Guards are prohibited from bringing personal weapons into prisons, but are not screened the way visitors are. Agents from the Justice Department's Inspector General's office returned fire, killing the guard. It was not immediately clear who fired the shot that killed Centner.
The House Judiciary Committee unexpectedly passed a Democratic resolution yesterday morning calling on the Justice Department to turn over all requests made by the National Security Agency and other federal agencies to telephone service providers to obtain information without a warrant. The measure was passed by a voice vote with support of Republican Chairman James Sensenbrenner. It was introduced by Florida Democrat Robert Wexler. Sensenbrenner told the committee he would bring the measure to the full House floor for a vote if the Justice Department did not comply with his earlier request for information about the program. The resolution is not a subpoena. It would have to pass the full House before it had the effect of law. The resolution comes on the heels of last month's revelation by USA Today that the National Security Agency was amassing the phone records of Americans in possible violation of federal law. Officials speaking under the condition of anonymity estimated the collected phone records number in the trillions.
The U.S. Senate yesterday defeated a proposal pushed by Democrats to raise the federal minimum wage in increments from $5.15 an hour to $7.25 an hour by 2009. Senator Edward Kennedy, a Massachusetts Democrat, unsuccessfully tried to attach the proposal raising the minimum wage for the first time since 1997 to a defense authorization bill that's expected to be passed by the Senate soon.
A federal judge ordered prosecutors to turn over more evidence to back up allegations that Jose Padilla, or Padilla, and two co-defendants conspired to kill, injure, or kidnap people overseas as part of a global Islamic terrorist network. U.S. District Judge Marcia Cook said she agreed with claims made by defense attorneys that the indictment against Padilla and the others is very light on facts, and that would link the defendants to specific acts of terrorism or victims. Cook ordered the government to flesh out its charges by providing defense lawyers with the names of unindicted co-conspirators, broad descriptions of intended victims of alleged acts of violence, and specifics about false statements Hassoun allegedly made about the meaning of phone calls intercepted by the government. Prosecutors argue that most of the specifics were being turned over already, mainly in the form of more than 225 key phone intercepts, and there were 80 specific illegal acts alleged in the indictment.
Human rights campaigners protested this week in Vienna against the U.S. detention center at Guantanamo Bay during George Bush's visit for an EU-U.S. summit. A visibly angry Bush rounded on the two remaining members of Washington's Axis of Evil today as he dismissed, quote, absurd, end quote, suggestions that the U.S. presents the greatest threat to world stability. At a fence-mending summit with the EU in Vienna, Bush made clear that he believes Iran and North Korea pose the most serious danger when he warned both countries not to test his patience.
The U.S. military has begun sending thousands of battered Humvees and other war-torn equipment home as more Iraqi units join the fight against insurgents and American units scheduled for Iraq duty have their orders canceled. In the last 4 months, the Army has tagged 7,000 Humvees and 17,000 other pieces of equipment to be shipped to the United States to be rebuilt. They then will be distributed among active and reserve units at home or possibly returned to equip Iraqi security forces. The military said the shipments will result in a reduction in the amount of U.S. equipment in Iraq, a cut made possible because the area patrolled by American troops is shrinking. The move also anticipates that the number of American troops in Iraq will decline. Analysis say that removing so much equipment now suggests commanders are laying the groundwork for an extensive reduction. Pulling equipment from Iraq also suggests that the U.S. military is looking past Iraq, rebuilding itself for some future conflict.
President Bush has said he'd like to close the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay and send many detainees back to their home countries, but he said not all the inmates would be returned. Some would need to be put on trial in the U.S. because they were, and he said, I quote, cold-blooded killers, end quote. The comments came after talks with EU leaders at the one-day summit in Vienna. Bush then flew on to Hungary, where he'll make a speech today. The U.S. has faced mounting pressure over Guantanamo Bay, the camp that currently holds about 460 detainees, mostly without charge. Bush said he understood European concerns over the U.S. detention center, but he added that there are some detainees who need to be tried in U.S. courts. Austrian Chancellor Wolfgang Schüssel, who hosted the talks, welcomed Bush's comments on an eventual closure and offered to help negotiate with countries that are to take detainees back. Calls to close Guantanamo have increased following the first apparent suicides by prisoners early this month.
And Bush's drive for line-item veto power to control deficit spending is facing resistance in the U.S. House of Representatives, Bush's top budget aide said on Tuesday, and the president faces a possible embarrassing rebuff in a vote set for Thursday. White House Budget Director Rob Portman on Capitol Hill trying to win over skeptical Republican members of the House Appropriations Committee and other lawmakers acknowledged to reporters that the vote might go against Bush. Backers hope such a measure would par the special interest pork in bills that has contributed to budget deficits that have hit at least $300 billion annually since 2003. Stronger line item veto power was given to former President Bill Clinton, who used it 82 times, but it was ruled unconstitutional in 1998. The issue received new life following recent scandals in which lobbyists have doled out gifts to lawmakers in exchange for spending the legislation favorable to their clients. In the Senate, Republicans pushed ahead in the budget committee for a line item veto coupled with other budget reforms that could push down domestic spending. Pressure to cut domestic spending could be more acute as Republicans also are pushing to permanently repeal the estate tax, which would cost hundreds of billions of dollars in lost revenues and interest over the 10 years. This from Reuters.
And now this.
The beer had attraction, but not the way Pabst Blue Ribbon had intended. A bartender called police because he thought a blinking red light was a terrorist bomb. After he alerted the authorities, 35 people were evacuated from a resort hotel. The suspicious light was part of an ad that was suction cupped to the window of the Sam Snead restaurant in Swan Lake Resort. Guests were allowed back into their rooms less than an hour later after a sheriff's office determined the light was part of a Pabst Blue Ribbon ad. Doug Ledeek, general manager of the resort in Plymouth, said the false alarm is a sign of the times.
Bolivian President Evo Morales drew a sharp denial from the U.S. Embassy when he claimed in a speech that the United States is sending soldiers disguised as students and tourists to Bolivia. The accusation comes as Morales faces attacks by political opponents for his relationship with President Hugo Chavez. Morales offered no evidence to back his claim. Spokesman Alex Contreras said Morales would provide evidence, though he did not say when. The U.S. Embassy called Morales' charge unfounded, saying in a statement, "We reiterate once more that we are supporting Bolivian democracy in a consistent way." U.S. military special operations teams have been sent to Latin America for the last few years. U.S. officials have said the teams are not covert and are known to the host governments, but won't say where they're deployed. Relations between Bolivia and the U.S. have been frosty since Morales took office in January. While he's built close ties with Venezuela and Cuba, his remarks toward the U.S. have grown increasingly strident. Earlier this month, Morales said, without offering specifics, that the U.S. had tried to assassinate him in the past. There has been no mention in the mainstream media of the School of the Americas' involvement in the situation.
The Cuban Communist Party has announced that Cuba has sentenced a once powerful government member to 12 years in prison for corruption. Juan Carlos Robinson, expelled from the ruling Politburo in April, pleaded guilty, official media reported. President Fidel Castro last year vowed to stamp out corruption, which he said threatened the survival of Cuba's socialist system. Robinson was tried and convicted last week, the official Granma newspaper said. Robinson was one of the few Afro-Cuban political figures on the island and had been presented by the government as an example of Cuba's young black leadership. Yesterday, the party leadership indicated that Robinson's fate should be an example, saying, "In our country, no one, despite their responsibilities and merits, can violate the law. He who does so will inexorably receive the weight of the revolutionary justice." Robinson's conviction comes amid a series of changes in the Communist Party across the island, with several top officials being replaced. The government has said increased vigilance against corruption is required as the country emerges from what it has labeled as special period.
Hamas has made a major political climb down by agreeing to sections of a document that recognizes Israel's right to exist and a negotiated two-state solution, according to the Palestinian leader. In a bitter struggle for power, Hamas is bowing to an ultimatum from the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas to endorse the document drawn up by Palestinian security prisoners in Israeli jails or face a national referendum on the issue that could see the Islamist group stripped of power if it loses. The final agreement on the paper, designed to end international sanctions against the Hamas government that crippled the Palestinian economy, has been slowed by wrangling over a national unity administration and the question of who speaks for the Palestinians.
And Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert has issued an apology for Israeli airstrikes in the past 2 days that killed 5 innocent Palestinians. He called the attacks a terrible accident and against government policy. Israel uses airstrikes to take out militant targets in Palestinian areas. Olmert's apology came in Petra, Jordan, where he met with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas at the informal breakfast hosted by Jordan's king. Olmert and Abbas said they will hold a formal meeting soon. Yesterday, a missile aimed at a Palestinian thought responsible for firing rockets at Israeli towns went off course and hit a house, killing 2 Palestinian civilians. And a day earlier, 3 children died in another Israeli attack. After 2 civilians were killed in yesterday's attack, Abbas accused the Israelis of targeting the innocent.
In Britain, according to Agence France-Presse, U.S. retail giant Walmart could soon face its first nationwide strike at its Asda supermarket subsidiary in Britain after workers voted in favor of industrial action in a row over pay. The trade union GMB said its members at 20 Asda distribution centers in Britain have backed walkouts by 3-1, while its leaders would meet today to outline a program of industrial action. If it goes ahead, the walkout will be the first nationwide strike since Asda was bought by Walmart 7 years ago. Asda is Britain's second biggest supermarket group after Tesco. The union said its members want to see the establishment of professional bargaining structures between the company and GMB governing pay conditions and union facilities in all 20 distribution depots. The action only related to Asda's distribution centers and not its stores.
And the level of violence in some areas of Iraq is worsening dramatically. The U.S. forces may soon to leave by the Iraqi government. In an exclusive interview with The Australian, former U.S. Deputy Secretary of State Richard Armitage has given a gloomy assessment of the situation. He said the British used to make a big deal of walking around in their berets in the South, and now they won't even go to the latrines without their helmets. The South has gotten much rougher. It's mainly Shia-on-Shia violence. Armitage said much of the violence came from differences over how the Islamic religion should be interpreted, and he said he believed the Iraqis would soon ask the U.S. to leave their country. The most optimistic scenario following a U.S. withdrawal would be that Iraq would become a looser federation with a weak central government. This is because almost all of Iraq's neighbors and resistive Shia minorities and the governments of both Iraq and Iran would come under pressure to intervene on their behalf.
According to the BBC, security staff guarding Australian diplomats in Baghdad have provoked a row by mistakenly shooting dead a bodyguard of the Iraqi trade minister. The incident happened when the Australian security team reportedly mistook Abdul Fallah al-Sudani's plainclothes guards for insurgents. Sudani accused Australia of trampling on the dignity of Iraqis. He demanded Australia explain itself and compensate the families of those killed and wounded in the incident. At least 3 of Sudani's guards are believed to have been hurt in the attack by the Australian security team. Witnesses say the Australian's guards opened fire as they were escorting an embassy delegation out of Sudani's Baghdad office. Iraqi officials said the Australian guards may have mistaken the bodyguards for insurgents, as they were dressed in civilian clothes and armed with AK-47s, like most other people in Iraq.
And gunmen in Iraq abducted about 85 workers yesterday as they left work at an industrial plant north of Baghdad. Police and a witness said the workers were thought to be mostly Shiite, and the plant is located in a predominantly Sunni Arab area. The witness said that about 85 workers were taken near the plant's parking lot.
China's economic and diplomatic push into Africa has gone into overdrive this week with a seven-country tour by its premier, Wen Jiabao, to secure trade deals. After warm welcomes in Egypt, Ghana, the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Angola, Wen arrived in South Africa today for 2 days of talks on nuclear power, textile imports, and regional alliances. The visits form part of what Beijing foreign policy officials have dubbed the Year of Africa, a drive for access to the continent's natural resources to fuel China's booming economy. Wen was greeted in Cape Town with a red carpet, two lines of cabinet ministers, and a South African Navy brass band. It was his fifth such ceremony in as many days, with two more later this week in Tanzania and Uganda. China's trade with the continent reached a record $39.7 billion last year, almost four times the figure in 2001. As ubiquitous as Chinese technicians building roads and railways are Chinese-run shops and restaurants. Schools have started teaching Mandarin, and direct flights to Beijing and Shanghai are proliferating. This from The Guardian.
And Somalia's three top leaders have flown to Sudan for peace talks with the Islamic group, which controls Mogadishu. President Abdullah Youssef left Kenya along with the Prime Minister and the Speaker of the Parliament, despite earlier insisting on conditions for talks. The team from the Union of Islamic Courts is also on its way for the talks, following their seizure of the capital from an alliance of warlords. Diplomats say there's a window of opportunity to bring peace to Somalia. The country has not had an effective national government for 15 years. Members of the interim government at first welcomed the Islamic group's victory in Mogadishu, and over the weekend, the possibility of conflict came closer when Islamic court's leaders said Ethiopia troops had crossed the border, hinting they had gone to support Mr. Youssef. Youssef had earlier insisted that there would be no negotiations unless the Union of Islamic Courts recognized his interim government. He also said the Islamists only seized the city because they were backed by thousands of extremists from around the world. This from the BBC.
The world's top scientists have joined forces to call for evidence-based teaching of evolution in schools. A statement signed by 67 national science academies says evidence on the origin of life is being concealed, denied, or confused in some classes. It lists key facts on evolution that scientific evidence has never contradicted.
This has been the KABU Morning News for Thursday, June 22nd, 2006. Thank you for listening. Today's editor is Chris Andre. Our engineer is Steve. And Kathleen Stevenson is a KABU AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre.
We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge on translator K246AA, and 100.7 in the Willamette Valley on translator K220HR. If you'd like to volunteer in the AM newsroom, call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or email at amnews@kabu.org. Portland area weather, patchy clouds, becoming mostly cloudy to the north, partial afternoon clearing, temperatures in the 70s. Tonight, mostly cloudy, temperatures 40 to 45.